Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What takes place off the beaten path of France's vast network of wineries, and what might change if you went there? There are nearly 80,000 wine growers working in the country's 472 appellations, and even their output accounts for just half of the country's wine production overall. As a wine enthusiast while living in North Texas, Robert V. Camuto considered himself pretty knowledgeable about the stuff. That changed when he sold the paper he had founded, the Fort Worth Weekly, and moved with his wife and son to an olive oil mill in the south of France in 2001. Traveling around the country, Camuto realized how much there was to learn and to discover in what he considers the golden age of French wine. He writes about it all in his new book, Corkscrewed: Adventures in the New French Wine Country. Robert, welcome to Think.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
You write that you no longer think of wine as a drink. It's more to you than that.
Yes, it certainly is. And when I moved to France from Fort Worth, Texas in 2001, I took it upon myself to start traveling from one end of this country to the other. And in every region that I traverse, and there are just so many, because it's important to think of, if you think of France, it's about almost one-third the size of California, but it's got the geographical diversity of a huge country like the United States, with the Mediterranean in the southeast and the Atlantic along the west and the north, and the Alps and famous rivers like the Rhone and the Loire. And each of these regions has its own particular wines and its own particular cultures. A lot of times we Americans tend to think of France as a unified country, that there would be a French cuisine or a unified sort of French culture, but really, as in much of Europe, it's many subcultures with their each with their own cuisines and each with their own wines that go with it. And as I traveled, I began to think of wine really more not so much as a drink, but as a food that went with these indigenous cuisines. Wine is something also that's very historic in Europe. Peasants in the fields used to be paid with 1 kilo of bread and one, or not paid, but their for their sustenance, they were given 1 kilo of bread and 1 liter of wine to carry them through the day. And wine is something that's always consumed at meals, paired with different kinds of food. And I just really began to see it as more of a food than as we would say a drink or a cocktail that we oftentimes view it as.
Yeah, I thought it was fascinating. You talk about the fact that, you know, we always imagine that foods have evolved and wine has evolved separately and they just sort of go together. But you think that the way the region or a particular region's best wines have turned out may have influenced the sorts of foods that they eat.
Yes. I think that that's, certainly true when you look at France and also the other, you know, traditional wine growing countries. When you look at Northern France, for example, and many areas that focus more on cream and butter, the wines there tend to be more lean and acidic to kind of cut through the richness of the food. And then when you look at the South, the wines tend to be a little more robust and fruity to go with cuisines that are a little more spicy and vegetable-based. And so, yes, I think that they've evolved hand in hand.
So essentially, there are three things that go into making a wine taste the way it does. There's the terrain in which the grapes are grown, the grapes themselves, and the winemaker. Can you talk about how those three elements really interact with each other?
What was the first thing that you said?
Terroir, I know, is the correct
term.
Yeah,
terroir, yes.
And then the grapes themselves, and then the winemaker.
Yes. Well, terroir is something that is a really interesting concept that gets talked about a lot now, and it is terroir is really the climate, the exposition, the geology of soils, all that goes into making a locale particular. And what's really interesting about that, too, is that really when you look at how terroir is studied, these are things that have been experimented with since the time of the Romans. I mean, they basically, I like to say the Romans really scouted out some of the best real estate for a lot of things, and certainly for making wine. And that comes into play in the Appalachians of France, where as you drive up, say, for example, the Rhone Valley or these other areas, every hillside is charted, and from town to town and appellation to appellation, the wines really, really do vary. So that's a very important thing. And, you know, of course, grapes go into it. And but unfortunately, nowadays there's a lot of other things that does go into wine, which is sort of a travesty in the sense that wine should be made from grapes, and yet wine is one of those products. When you buy wine at a wine store, all the additives that could be in it, if we're talking about industrial producers and whatnot, they're not required to put all that on the bottle. But a lot of big production industrial wine has flavor enhancers, acids, bacteria, and who knows what added. And the third element, and I think this is really important as far as my book goes, is the people. I mean, wine is something that's meant to be shared among people. It's been made by people from biblical times and before. And I'm very, very fascinated with winemakers because I feel that wine is really one of the few human endeavors that combines agriculture, science, philosophy, cuisine, all the and human observation, and a whole host of other things, and I think that makes it really interesting. And I really enjoyed writing about and meeting the people in my book Corkscrewed. It's been one of the most fascinating adventures of my life.
Yeah, one of the interesting characters was this guy, Nicolas Joly. I don't know.
Yeah, Nicolas Joly, yes.
Yeah, who's this banker turned naturalist, essentially.
Yeah. Well, Nicolas Joly is a man. He has a vineyard in the Loire Valley called the Coulée de Saron. And he is very well known now as sort of the godfather of biodynamic winemaking. Now, Nicolas is French. He went to business school, got his MBA at Columbia University in New York, which was also my alma mater for journalism school. He was there before, however. And I think after a number of years of working in finance and making a lot of money, he decided to go home to his family estate and to run the winery there. And at a certain point, he discovered biodynamics, which is a somewhat complicated thing to describe, but it revolves around some of the teachings of Rudolf Steiner. And what Steiner had done was talk to a lot of the old peasants back in his day at the turn of the century about the agricultural methods they did and the things that they did according to the moon and the phases of the planets and the natural sort of remedies and herbs that they used within agriculture. And the basic idea of biodynamics is to try to recreate life of the soil. So it's, to a degree, it's like being organic, but it's sort of beyond that in the sense that people are doing things according to the moon and the stars and using sort of only natural remedies and herbs and a homeopathic approach towards plants. It can get pretty esoteric, but the main thing that I think is important and that is happening with this generation of winemakers, particularly in France, leading that movement, is that there's more now of an idea of respect for the environment. In the post-war years, the tractors rolled out, the herbicides came in, the pesticides. And I think now, in the last 10, 15 years, you have a new generation that's saying, wait a minute, stop. This is killing the soils. This is not good for the earth. It's not going to be ultimately good for the vines and ultimately for the product that we're making in the world. And so there are many different avenues that people and many different theories that people use to grow wine in a way that's more respective of the environment.
Robert V. Camuto is my guest. He is a journalist and former owner of the Fort Worth Weekly. He lives in France now, and he's written a book called Corkscrewed, Adventures in the New French Wine Country. We'll be back to our discussion with Robert in just a moment. We will hear, among other things, about how he worked as a hand in the fields during harvest time in a vineyard and how that went. It's a funny story in some places and really interesting in others. Jeff Winnington is here with me now, and Jeff is here because we are continuing with our fall membership campaign. No, winter membership campaign.
Yes, it is the winter membership campaign, Chris. And thanks so much to Robert for joining us today. This is a really fascinating topic, and the book Corkscrewed is available when you join the station at 800-456-5372 or online at kera.org. It's yours with our thanks when you make a $120 pledge to KERA. And it's really important today, Chris, that we hear from everyone who's even considered joining the station. We have a $500 challenge today on the board. During Think, this challenge is from the Body Garage, a Pilates studio in Fort Worth. And KERA will receive an additional $500 only, though, if we receive 100 contributions from you before 2 p.m. Now, this is contributions at any level. If you're already a member of the station and you can do 10 extra dollars or 20 extra dollars, that counts too. We need to hear from you right now at 800-456-5372.
On the other hand, if you call that number or if you go online to kera.org and you want to do $10 or $20 a month, of course, you could choose a thank you gift if you're so inclined. We have Robert Camuto's book, Corkscrewed, at the $120 membership level. At $240, there are other rewards. Of course, the real reward is listening to the station every day, knowing that it's strong, and being part of something that matters in your community. So far, you have raised $215,000 for this station. We greatly appreciate every single one of you who is a part of that. If you're on the fence, why don't you just jump over to our side and see how great it feels?
It's very easy. It just takes a moment. The phone number is 800-456-5372. The web address, of course, you know it. You might even be listening online live right now. It's kera.org. Just click on the support banner at the top of the front page, and you can make your gift of support there.
You know, even if you are listening to the podcast, the number always works.
That's so right. That's
don't
true.
Feel like if this is out in the future somewhere, you podcast people, 1-800-456-5372 or online at kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses beginning in January. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is journalist Robert V. Camuto. He's the former owner of the Fort Worth Weekly, but now he lives in the south of France, which is where he wrote his new book, Corkscrewed, Adventures in the New French Wine Country. You can get a copy of this with our compliments by calling 1-800-456-5372 and making a $120 pledge contribution or above, or you can go online and take care of that. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call at this number, 1-800-933-5372. Or you can send email to think@kera.org. You have, Robert, an amazing chapter about spending a week working the harvest at a vineyard. Talk first about what you expected ahead of time from the experience.
Well, what did anything that I would have expected, I don't think could have quite prepared me for the experience of working the harvest on the good level, on the bad level, on just about any level. I would say in the years that I lived in Dallas-Fort Worth, which I think was about 17 years, I was a weekend gardener. So I knew what it was like to maybe cut things and bend and work in the soil a bit. But anyway, I worked the harvest. I have met a friend in the south of France who was from Alsace in northeastern France by the German border, who was from the town of Volksheim. And so I joined my friend Daniel, who had a winemaking friend there in Volksheim, and joined some local Volksheimers in the harvest for about a week.
We should say this is something that a lot of French people do. They'll take a holiday from their regular jobs in every walk of life, and they'll go work at a vineyard.
Yes. Now, you know, traditionally that's been true, but sadly, you know, that's kind of something that's maybe happens less and less with, you know, consumer society and schedules and demanding employers, et cetera. But, yes, it still does exist, especially in a place like Alsace and these villages there. And on the upside, I mean, there's really just nothing like it when you're out there in the morning and the fog and the smell of the vines and the you know, maybe some burning wood, and you know, it's just an incredible ambiance. And on the downside is that about, I don't know, maybe it was I don't remember how many minutes into the picking. I'm sure I recounted the precise number in the book, but my back just about seized up because picking grapes is really tough work. And the people who used to do this and who are accustomed to do it are, I think, really a lot tougher than we people who are accustomed to being in cities and leading fairly pampered lives. And so anyway, to say the least, I mean, mid-morning, the first day, I thought I was going to die. I didn't think that I was going to survive this. There was no way. And then at about 10 o'clock, mid-morning, a little tractor puts up, and and out comes the sausage and the food, and out comes, you know, our first morning drink of wine. And after that break, I kind of knew that I could survive. So for the next several days, we worked hard together with this group. There were people from all walks of lives, all walks of life, whether they had worked in a bank or were students or were accustomed to doing agricultural work. And it was really a great group of people. I've rarely felt so close to a group of people so quickly as I did with this group. But I will say the first day or two, you know, they're looking at me. This is an American. What's he doing in Volksheim? No American has ever come to Volksheim to pick grapes before. I think I was twice accused of being a spy.
They thought that you were stealing the wine recipe, right? Or the method for making this great wine.
No, well, I don't know that I would take the recipes for making these great Alsatian white wines back to California. But it was a great fantastic week, and at the very end of it, there's a ritual in that area that for people when they do their first harvest to throw them in a vat of grapes. So that was kind of the ending for me. I thought my week was over, and I got lifted up and thrown head first into a batch of white wine grapes.
Did that physical labor, has it changed since that moment the way you consider the craftsmanship and the work that goes into every sip that you take?
Yes. I mean, it certainly has. And the winemaker that I'd worked for there, Jean Bernard Siebert, he had said something to me that struck a chord, because also while we're picking and doing this excruciating labor, off on another hillside, you would see one of these harvesting machines coming down the hillside. And, you know, after a day of doing this, you are just so, so tired. And, you know, all you want to do is, you know, take a hot shower and go to bed. And you would see how quickly these machines could work. And I think really, I mean, to rent a machine would probably be cheaper than doing it the way we did it, and having all these people to care for, to feed, to pay, et cetera. But I remember Jean Bernard saying that to him, I mean, he was just dead set against machines. He was dead set against the idea that machines would be picking the grapes and making the wine. And he said, the day the machines make the wine will be the day I stop drinking it.
Yeah, time and time again, you met people who, and he was one of them, Siebert, who might have made better wines, they might have made more expensive wines. That was also really not what they were doing there.
No, I mean, I think what's interesting to know, too, and you'd asked me about this in the beginning, how I think of wine. And so often in America, we think of wine as sort of some kind of knob accessory or some kind of very refined drink, whereas in Europe, and I mean, you know, for thousands of years, wine has just been part of life. You know, it was something that in many times when the water wasn't very clean, I mean, aided the digestion and helped people's health. And I think when you go into these little villages in Alsace, they're not interested in making a wine that to impress critics or to make a sommelier in a restaurant to impress a sommelier in a restaurant. You know, across the ocean, or even in France. I mean, they're interested in making the wine that people consume in their homes and restaurants and locally that they share with their family and friends on a daily basis, pretty much almost every afternoon and evening.
Yeah, most of the people you met are no fans of, say, Robert Parker.
Yes.
Can you talk about this idea of rating wines and what, in your mind, it does to sort of, I don't know if it shapes our tastes or tells us what we should like and what we shouldn't like?
Well, I think the whole idea of rating wine on a 100-point scale. I mean, I just hate it. I mean, to me, it's just, you know, it's just, I wouldn't want to do it. I understand that there's a reason for it, and I understand the idea of wine guides, et cetera. I also write a lot for the Wine Spectator, although I write about people and places and am not really as interested in evaluating wines with these on these scales. And one of the reasons why I don't like it, I was thinking of this the other day, but I think that Robert Parker, for example, is one person with one nose and one set of taste buds, and he likes what he likes. But for me, there are so many things wrong with that, and, well, not so much with Robert Parker expressing his opinions, but with people following it the way they do. And I'll try to outline some of those for you. One is, you taste this wine in a void, and this often happens with wine tastings. People open the bottle, as you would in a restaurant, open the bottle and pour a glass, and you taste it. And one puts, you know, your judgment down with that. One of the big problems in that is, in a lot of these tastings, people taste maybe 100 wines altogether. And so a lot of times the wines that stand out are the big blockbuster, high alcohol, high sugar, the big wow wines. And, you know, to me, those may not be the very best wines for drinking with the meal that you may be preparing or prepared to enjoy. So I think we Americans sometimes get too hung up on, well, what's the best? What's the best wine? And I often say, when people ask me that, I say, well, what are you going to drink it with? What kind of food? And et cetera. Another problem is wine is always evolving. And a lot of times what will happen is there'll be like a certain vintage where people will say, wow, that's a good year. Robert Parker gave this, you know, Bordeaux 96 to 98 points in this vintage. And a lot of times people go out and run out and buy that vintage and they want to open it up and just serve it right away and you know, impress their friends with it. But the problem is that when you talk about a good year, oftentimes what a good year means is this will conserve for a very long time, which means that you really shouldn't be drinking it now. You should be waiting 10 or 15 years. So a lot of times I'll take a bad year or a mediocre year over a great year, for example, if it's for what I'm going to drink tonight or this weekend.
Robert V. Camuto is my guest. He is the author of a new book called Corkscrewed, Adventures in the New French Wine Country. We'll be back to our discussion with Robert in just a moment. Right now, we would invite you to call us at 1-800-456-5372. If you would like to have a copy of Robert's book, of course, as Jeff Whittington, who's just joined us, always says, you can go and get it at the bookstore. It's available. It's great. It's been well-reviewed, and it's a lot of fun to read. We would encourage you to do that. But if you're also thinking about supporting KERA today and you want to make a $120 contribution, you can do both at the same time. So give us a call right now, 1-800-456-5372, or go to kera.org. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. What a great conversation, and what a great day here during the membership campaign. We're having a really great day thanks to so many of you who are stepping up today, who are joining this tide of support for your public radio station. Chris, I want to say right now before we do anything else, to remind everyone, we have a $500 challenge today during Think. We must get 100 contributions from you. We must hear from 100 of you before 2 p.m. And if we don't, then we won't get this $500 additional gift. The Body Garage, a Pilates studio located in Fort Worth, is making a challenge to you listeners of Think, to you, listeners of KERA, to see if 100 of you will contribute during Think today. And if you do, if we hit that number, we'll get an additional $500 donation, and we really appreciate that as well, from the Body Garage in Fort Worth.
I want to thank people like Kathy Hulka in Grapevine, Eugenia Moreno in Irving, Sue Friedman in Dallas, the Reverend Ruth Alterberry in Duncan, Oklahoma, and you, if you are on the phone now or if you have called during this campaign. I'm seeing a number 94 there. I'm not sure what that means, but I will assume that we started out needing Oh, we have 94 left to... 94 people left to call. Okay, we got to get moving here.
Yeah.
We got to get moving. This is 100 people we need. This is our first challenge grant of the week. It's great to have the folks at the Body Garage offering this. $500 is a lot of money for us to walk away from.
It is a lot of money to not receive. And you've got to understand that the reason that these local businesses make the challenges is because, you know, they obviously support KERA. They obviously listen to KERA. Obviously, we're mentioning their business. I mean, there's complete transparency here at KERA. We have underwriting announcements, and we have challenge grants during membership campaigns. A business like the Body Garage, a Pilates studio located in Fort Worth, they probably are just as passionate about KERA as you are, and they want to share their enthusiasm for the radio station. So they're saying, you know, we're going to give this money to KERA, but only if you support it as well. And that's what we're trying to get you to do right now, one call at a time at 800-456-KERA.
Or you can also go online to KERA.org. You know, again, we have to think about it this way. We're all spending money on something in an average day, in an mm-hmm. average week. You have to think about what you're spending your money on and what your values are. And, you know, there's certain things that you absolutely have to get. And then there are other things that are part of your discretionary income. KERA might fall into discretionary income, but I would argue a membership to the station is not a luxury.
It's not. It's an organization, and it's a service that you really depend on to be here every day. And three times a year, we come to you for a few days and we say, hey, we're depending on you. You're depending on other people's contributions, and other people are depending on your contribution right now to continue to make KERA a strong reality in North Texas. 91 calls or online contributions necessary to meet this challenge. We really do need to hear from you right now at 800-456-5372.
And we even have a representative from the Body Garage answering phones right now, so it's great to know. You can help us get to this challenge grant by calling 1-800-456-5372, or you can go online to KERA.org. It only takes a minute or two to set up a membership, and that includes setting up a sustaining membership, which is really great because then you become a member and it's all done and you always stay current, and it's terrific for you. So again, 1-800-456-5372. Thanks.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses beginning in January. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is journalist Robert V. Camuto. His new book is called Corkscrewed, Adventures in the New French Wine Country. We would love to send you a copy with our compliments when you join the station this afternoon at the $120 level. The number to call is 1-800-456-5372. If you've got a question, you can call 1-800-933-5372. Robert, you have, in the last chapter of the book, you write about this really finicky varietal that hardly anyone grows anymore, but you found a vintner that just would not give it up. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Well, actually, what it is, you know, there are so many different grape varietals. I mean, there are just hundreds. And the closer you look, even in a place like France, there are still grapes that are just practically unheard of out of their local regions. And this is an area in the south of France called the Ardèche, which is kind of, I like to think of it as sort of the Vermont of France. It's a very kind of cool, laid-back, area. And in this area, they had discovered a couple of acres of this of vines that were known as chatus. And so the local cooperative, for their 50th anniversary, they vinified these grapes separately and did some tests on it, and they had some great results and are doing experiments with it, and it's I think it's a fantastic thing. It's part of their local identity, and it shows that even in this day and age, with wines being so documented and poured over, that that there still is room for discovery, and there is just all the time.
Well, you know what's so amazing about that portion of the book is that, so there's room for discovery, but how often do things like Chatus get out of the local region in which they're grown? What are the chances that we'll find them here in the U.S., even in a restaurant or somewhere?
Well, this particular one, I mean, for some things, you know, when it comes to adventures in wine and terroir, you just have to go out and experience it. If you think about it, I mean, tens of thousands of wine producers that there are in France. I mean, how many make it to the shelves of your local wine cellar? You know, there's very few, and those would tend to be the ones that would probably have better connections with international sales and marketing. So, and some of them don't get out of there because there's no market. So it's a kind of a chicken or egg thing. There's no demand, so there's no supply. But the variety in France, more than any other place in the world, is just absolutely astounding. From just in white wines, from sweet to off-dry to dry wines, and red wines, and it's really astounding.
And you tasted this one at several different stages, the first of which were not very good at all, and then when it was finally ready, it was so good that there was this wonderful colloquialism that the winemaker used to describe it. I don't know if you remember that part of the book.
Yes. We were talking about, no, it was one of the people that was tasting, it's one of my favorite French expressions, Le petit Jésus en culotte de velours, which means baby Jesus in velvet short pants, which means that's how magnificent it was.
It's that good.
Yeah.
Robert, how do French people educate themselves about wine? Do they need to, or is it something that they're somehow their DNA is different from ours, and they know this from the beginning?
Well, you know, I think in general, in countries like France, Italy, for example, cuisine is just so much a part of the culture. And I think it has to do with education. I think it starts not only in the families, but in the schools too. And I think that children here often are exposed to so many different flavors and cuisines and aromas, and I think that they are taught to smell. In fact, what's interesting, the verb sentir in French, to smell, also means, when it's used in reflexive, is to understand.
Huh.
I kind of find that fascinating, and I think that's and you think of France with all those aromas and all those cheeses, each with a different smell, and each one belonging to a different area. So I think smelling is sort of a way that we do understand the world, and I think that is definitely more ingrained in the culture and education here.
I know that the French government has made an effort to campaign for people to drink somewhat less than they have in the past. Is that having an impact on the industry?
Well, you know, is it having an impact? I'm sure it is having an impact. Yes, it is having an impact, because every statistic that you see that comes out about wine drinking is that people are drinking less. France is always up there, just right about with Italy, as the largest wine consumer in the world. But per capita, that's been going down, but there's been more of a movement towards quality. And this new generation of winemakers that I focus on in my book is really about not so much quantity, but producing quality wine. And that's the key to be successful in the world today. About 20 years ago, when you thought of French wine, there was Bordeaux, there was Burgundy, which were the great wines. But now, with a new generation that's been educated in practices and techniques, with a minimal amount of sound winemaking technology, great wines are being made in all these regions that used to be producing some more mediocre wines.
Robert V. Camuto is a former North Texas journalist. He was the owner of the Fort Worth Weekly. He now lives in the south of France, and his new book is called Corkscrews, Adventures in the New French Wine Country. Robert, it's been really an interesting hour. Thank you so much for spending it with us.
Thank you, Chris.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for calling this hour and supporting the station. We have 85 calls left to go in order to meet the challenge grant. We have until the end of Think, which gives us until about 2 o'clock. So we've got some time to play with here, but certainly not a lot of time, not a lot of time to sit around. If you're thinking about making a call, please do it now and help us guarantee that we receive this additional $500 from the Body Garage. 1-800-456-5372 is our telephone number. And Jeff Whittington, we have some people to thank.
We do. Susan Smith in Grapevine, Texas, of course. Jim and Sue Rushing in Arlington. Sally Veter in Dallas. Thanks so much to each of you. We'd love to say your name. We'd love to thank you personally. We would love to hear from you. When you take that next step, when you make the decision that your contribution is important, is as important as KERA's programming is to you, to the community of North Texas. You can do that right now at 800-456-5372 or online at KERA.org. I should say that online contributions, Chris, come in immediately, and they also whittle away at the 100 contributions necessary by 2 p.m. to receive this challenge
grant.
Right.
You can get it to us anyway. We will accept it from over the transom and everywhere else. Again, the number is 1-800-456-5372. If you are thinking about making a $120 contribution or above and you want to receive a thank you gift, among your choices is Corkscrewed, the new book by Robert V. Camuto. Of course, those of you who live in Fort Worth may have known him for years as the founder and the manager of the Fort Worth Weekly. He sold that in 2000 and moved to the south of France, and we've all talked about what a hard life he must have now, but I think he works hard.
And actually, in a couple of weeks, Chris, I just have to tell you now, I'm moving to the south of France.
All right.
Yeah, I'm selling the radio station.
All the good journalists are going to the south of France.
What can we say?
I know. Well, you'll have this book as a guidebook
if you make
your $120 contribution.
as I say, that's just part of the cabin in the forest of my mind right there. And when you make your contribution,
are we back to this metaphor?
You make your contribution.
Just Kevin has bats flying in and
out. You're making a down payment on that place. That place that you can go whenever you turn the radio on to find out something that's interesting, to hear a conversation that's informative on the weekend, maybe even during the week, entertaining programming right here on KERA. What else, where else, rather, are you going to find the kinds of things that you hear on KERA?
1-800-456-5372 is the telephone number to support this station that exists because of listeners. You can also go to KERA.org. We want to thank Emily and David Emmett in Euless, Brian Best in Fort Worth, Ginger Cleveland in Grand Prairie, and everybody else who is on the line now, including Melissa Wright in Plano and Charles and Eula Axe of Garland.
Wow, we're hearing from all over the Metroplex. We would love to hear from you at 800-456-5372. 84 contributions still to go to make this goal. And we've got to hear from you at 800-456-KERA or online at KERA.org. And I'm really worried, Chris, because in the next hour, we're sort of treading into the really dangerous territory during the pledge drive.
Because we have Wally Lamb coming up.
We have, one of the biggest fiction writers in the country today, most popular coming in. I was getting emails weeks ago. Are you going to get Wally Lamb? Are you going to get Wally Lamb? We've got it right here in studio in the next hour. And, you know, I'm afraid that people are going to be so into the conversation that they're not going to take a moment to call.
Take this moment now while Jeff and I are droning on at you. Take this moment. You will miss no interesting content whatsoever. 1-800-456-5372 is the telephone number. You can also go online to kera.org and become a member of the station. Look, membership is something that you choose to do because you believe in the service and because you use the service. The way public radio is set up, we don't have the ability to make it subscription only so that we are sending something to your house and you plug it in. It's out there on the airwaves, and we're happy about that. But the understanding is that all of us who listen, make a contribution at whatever level feels comfortable. Look, for some of you, that's going to be $5,000, and for others, it might be $50. You can break it up over the year, so it's a few dollars a month and you make a sustaining contribution. However you want to set it up is fine, but we do really appreciate those of you who take that extra step and decide that you will be part of the thing that makes public radio possible. You're not just a hanger-on, but you are one of the people who builds up the station.
Our job, for Chris and I, our job is to come in here and make think and to make the TV show and the radio show and for me to make the Anything show on Friday. But when you call 800-456-5372, you make KERA. If we weren't here, someone else would be doing this. We love public radio, and we're just as passionate about it as you are. But, you know, especially during a time like this, we've got our very first challenge on the table from our friends over at The Body Garage, a Pilates studio located in Fort Worth. They're going to give KERA an additional $500. That means a lot to me as someone who works here, but also as someone who is addicted to the station just like you are and listens to it all the time. That's a lot of money. That goes a long way to help offset the cost of running this organization. And if we don't hear from you and 99 others like you, but by 2 o'clock, we're not going to get that $500. You're essentially saying, if you don't call, no, you know what? I don't want KERA to get that extra $500.
You know, Jeff, there's an interesting breed of people out there, people who listen to the station all the time, who consider themselves public radio people, and who are genuinely happy when they hear us making our goals, and they hear that we've gotten a challenge, and they're, oh, what a relief. But there are people who don't call. There are people who sit there and think, well, someone else, gosh, I sure hope somebody else calls. And when we say you, we actually mean you. We are hoping that you don't assume that it's for someone else to do or that it's some weird class of people that you don't quite belong to. Public radio is called public for a reason. So give us a call now and support us at 1-800-456-5372 or support not us, but your station. This is your source for NPR News, KERA 90.1 Dallas-Fort Worth Denton, K261 CW 100.1 in Tyler, K202 DR 88.3 in Wichita Falls, K257 EV 99.3 in Sherman.
And no matter where you hear the station, whether you listen to one of those transmitters, whether you listen to the transmitter located in Cedar Hill that brings you 90.1, or you listen online at KERA.org, it is your public radio station. We're just asking you to be one of the 81 remaining contributors necessary to make this goal, to make this challenge a reality. It's a $500 challenge during Think Today. The challenge is from our friends at The Body Garage, a Pilates studio in Fort Worth. KERA will receive an additional $500 to help offset costs, to help keep the station on the air, to help keep the station fiscally healthy, but only and only if we hear from 100 of you during the show today. By 2 o'clock, we've heard from almost 20. We still need to hear from 81 of you, and this is at any level. If you're already a member of the station, if you joined last fall or you joined earlier in the drive and you want to help us make this challenge and you want to help the drive end that much sooner, consider calling and pledging another $10 or $15. That counts as one of the 100. It doesn't have to be at $100 or it doesn't have to be at $200. Any contribution at any level will help us meet this challenge.
You know, every few months, I sort of look at the books that have accrued on the bookshelf, and I, not too long ago, took out a calculator and looked at the sort of dollar value. And if you were to buy every single book that you hear about and learn about here on the station, you would be spending hundreds of dollars every single month. Now, there's a good chance that you go out and get a few of the things that you hear, and the rest of them you just benefit from listening to the show. Consider the value of that in your life, and put a dollar value on that and give it back to KERA. 1-800-456-5372 is our telephone number. You can also go to kera.org online, and you can have a copy of Corkscrewed.
Yeah, you can get your very own copy of the book. Of course, it's available at the bookstores. It's available online at online booksellers. of your choice. But we can send you one when you join the station at the $120 membership level. That's just $10 a month. If you become a sustaining member of KERA, you get your very own copy of Corkscrewed by Robert Camuto.
Please give us a call now. We have 79 calls left to go in order to make the challenge grant by 2 o'clock this afternoon by the end of Think. That's enough time for certainly for you to make a call because your call only takes 2 minutes, but it takes us that much closer. So please think about how much you listen to the station and how much you value it and give us a call at 1-800-456-5372 or online at kera.org. Thanks.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.